With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
It's the Anfield Wrap on Radio City Talk. Neil Atkinson with you until 7:30. And opposite me, I've got Mike Girling and Rob Gutman. They're joining me too. And coming up in part three, Gito Clewellyn is going to talk to us about what Swansea are up to, mostly being rubbish. But we'll let him expand upon that later on, and we will look ahead to Swansea. But we're going to spend the first half an hour chatting about what we've learned so far, what we've learned about the young lads. It's been a funny little run Liverpool have been on. They found themselves in a little bit of a pickle in terms of getting results on the board, but simultaneously they've come through the other side relatively unscathed under the circumstances. And I'm going to do the opening question, which we rarely do on this show, but I'm actually going to do it to these two opposite me, and I'm going to ask them which of the players under the age of 21 who've played for Liverpool, appeared for Liverpool in the last three, four, five games, which of them's going to get 200 appearances for the club?
I'm going to go for the obvious one then.
Well, go on,
you go first.
Trent Alexander-Arnold.
So you think Trent Alexander-Arnold's the one who will make 200 appearances for Liverpool?
Yeah, I think Trent Alexander-Arnold, I'll embellish on that if you like.
I very much want you to.
He's got more to him than just the position that he's been played in. You can see that. He has got an innate ability. He went in at the deep end against Man United, and it could have been disastrous. It looked like early on it was a bit of a gamble, but I like the way he grew into the game. He was up against a very, very fast player in Martial, and he did okay. He didn't pull up. You know, he wasn't Rob Jones we're talking here against Ryan Giggs, but he did okay. But I've seen him in other games, and he's got something about him. He's got a lovely touch. He moves well, and he reads the game well, and he can cross a ball. I think he's gonna be a good big player for us, but I don't think it'll be at fullback.
You think he'll end up playing somewhere else?
I think he'll play in, yes, he will. He'll play further up the pitch.
You're right. He's usually played further up the pitch. I think he will have. It's hard to know if he will eventually. Out of all of those lads.
Well, let me just be clear about this. There's only 106 footballers ever who've played 200 or more games for Liverpool.
Okay.
The 106th is Glenn Johnson.
Wow.
Jeff Strong, 105. I think I can go on.
Fullbacks can stack up the numbers, can't they?
They can.
Yeah. No one wants to play there. No. I would agree with Mike that it's Trent. Sadly, the reality for young footballers is that it's not more than one of the current clutch who's going to make those 200 appearances. Obviously, Ben Woodburn would be next in line, and you know he's easily young enough to be able to say he could get those on the board. But I'd agree with Mike by some distance if you're betting on it, it's Trent.
Okay. Neither of you thought Ajaria. I'm intrigued.
He came on and he played. I'm thinking of Shea or Joe. Ajaria played well. Yep, he did. But I don't think he's got that. No, I don't think he's got 200 in him. I think the key thing is 200. Is that the longevity? You know, being a key figure at the club for multiple seasons.
Yep. Okay.
I think if you talk about which ones will have Premier League careers and make 200 Premier League appearances, lower the bar a little bit.
Yes.
Then I think. Most of them, I think Ben Woodburn should. I think Ajaria should, and I think Shea Ojo should. You can't guarantee, but I think they've all got a really good chance of it. Whether it's with Liverpool or not, well, the next 12 months is massive.
That's what I'm asking. What I'm asking is what we've learned about them, because the next 12 months is massive to a certain extent. The manager himself, Mike, talks about, you know, that there's pressure in England beyond what he's used to for young players, the idea that they should be maturing around the age of 23.
I think that's
I agree with him.
I think that's right.
I think that's right. So, you know, we can't go too far on these five, these games that we've seen, possibly the Wolves game coming up, maybe another cup game after that. I don't think it quite feels... I don't think for any of them it's felt quite as make or break as maybe it has done in the past when you're Darren Potter and you're getting thrown in, if you know what I mean. It doesn't feel like it's got a, you're going to have to really impress here. I think all of them, with the possible exception of Kevin Stewart, who I want to talk about in a minute, all of them are in a situation where they're able to probably already be thinking about next pre-season, impressing the manager there, starting again. I don't think there's any of them for whom they feel as though there's a big cut-off that's happened or will happen anytime soon.
Other than... I think the age thing you're pointing out there is very interesting, and it goes both ways. We're going off down a massive rabbit hole here, but I'm okay with that if you are.
I'm very much so.
Okay.
It is the Anfield rap on brand.
Yeah, excellent. So I think 23 is a critical age for a footballer, because I think some people still think that's young, because I hear it bandied about all the time about players who are in our first team who are 23 and they say he's still very young, but it's not really, not for a footballer. I think 23, I think you have to have established yourself by 23. Then you can either... You kind of know where you got what your trajectory is going to be like as a footballer, because your next 3 to 4 years are your best years from 23, and that, you know, you're not really going to get better from 28 onwards. It's from 23 onwards when you're really going to start. It's like Suarez. I think we got Suarez at 23.
Yeah, depends what position. I think the forward positions, that's definitely true.
I know. Okay, it's an extreme example, but it was obviously his ability was there. It was just raw. Right, so I don't think saying 23 is I don't think it is young. I think that's the point where you know or you don't know if someone's got it.
Do you know who's bucked this recently? There's a big glaring example of, I don't know, maybe it's often a question of patience and preconception, is Harry Kane, because he spends his career until 23 not being on the edge of making it, and then he's thrown in, and then he fulfills that prophecy that you're talking about. The problem we've got with our view of youth football is we're tending to say if they don't look sensational by 18, 19, that they just are not going to hit the heights. I think that Klopp's talked about that. Kevin Stewart, who we're going to come and talk about in a minute, is possibly an example of the prejudice against the 23-year-old, because what you're saying is true, but the extrapolation from that is if at 22 they don't look like they're going to be the bomb, then
so I'm not saying they have to be the bomb. I'm saying that they can show they can be raw, but they can show something where you go, man, if we could just harness that, you know, there's something special there. I think if players aren't showing you something, even in glimpses where you go, my word, there's something, they're not just journeyman footballers by that stage, they've got something, right? So Harry Kane, for instance, deadly finisher, you know, he's always been he can finish, you know what I mean, he's got it's innate in him. Certain other players in our team, you talk about Stewart there, and maybe, you know, some people might break a Chan in that. Chan's 23, right? But people still say he's very young. He's 23, you know. He's at that cusp kind of thing. You know, what's the thing that he does which is, you know, unique to him and special, other than kind of like an all round sort of rounded player. I think with players that we've seen, certainly against Plymouth and in both legs, they're 18 and 19. You've obviously got, you know, they've got quite a few years there. They've got 5 years.
He's been more than 16 or 17.
17. So he's extremely young, and you know, so he did a lot of sideways and backwards passing the other night. But you know, that he's a young kid, and you could say, you know, he's overawed by the occasion, and we've seen enough of him in training to know that that isn't him. Kind of thing,
and it's a deep defence as well.
But you can say that isn't him. But what I guess my point is, by the time they get to 23, you kind of know that is them.
Yeah, very true.
And that therefore becomes sort of what have we learnt. And I think it's important that at times, Rob, you decide to do. I mean, I've written it down when I've written the agenda for this. You decide to do the definitive question: what have we learnt? And so that's the end of the matter, and then we all move on. And it's not. And let's be really clear about that. That what we're actually talking about is a process for these young men. That it's a process that they're going through of their own development. But what I'm going to ask the question really, but make it more open ended. You know, what have we learnt, and what do we think we're going to go on to continue to learn about a couple of them in there? You've discussed Alexander Arnold. I want to discuss Ajari with you. You know, I thought Ajaria was had a better first game against Plymouth than he did second, that it looked like it was, for whatever reason, whether it was them bypassing midfield, doing things a little differently, it looked like it was just that bit trickier for him to rise above. And that's, but let's be clear, at the same time, on the same football pitch, it looked like it was difficult for whatever reason for Daniel Sturridge and Philip Coutinho to rise above.
Yeah, Klopp made a point in his post-match press conference. I think the media wanted him to say, yeah, another great night for the young lads. And clearly it was a mixed bag night for the young lads. But his point was, I'm not going to give you an opinion on these boys after every game. The danger with us as fans and the media with young players is we put this lens on them every time. Because it's almost like a parallel of with the way it is for England players. We see them so rarely in that show, relatively speaking. So you see, used to be worse, you see a lad play three times in season for England, and every performance is microscopically analysed. This was just another passing performance. This was three games. I know it was a slightly higher level than they're playing a season, but we overanalyze. Okay, to answer the question.
I think it's important to put those caveats. Yeah, no, it's important to contextualise.
I think we are, as a nation, obsessed with the next thing.
Yeah,
constantly.
Yeah,
and Wenger's has got a lot of responsibility to bear here, because when Arsenal always used to play like their youth team in the League Cup and they'd like smash everybody until they got to the quarterfinals, they were like, oh my God, this is what Arsenal have got coming through on the ranks. You know, yeah. You can remember this was quite a regular thing every season about 5 or 6 years ago. They put like a really young side out and they would like torch the earth with like the first few rounds, and it was like, these are coming through, but they never did.
No.
They never did come through, and that obsession is part of our culture.
And what you end up doing is not judging them as individuals, we judge them as this sort of body of work, don't we?
Yeah.
It's got nothing to do with how good Liverpool's current general crop is as to whether Ajari is going to make it or not, quite frankly. It's about him as an individual, about how good he is. I think he's really promising. He's one of those, if you've watched him regularly in the under-18s and under-23s, where you're kind of mystified by him a bit. He flattered to deceive. He had a sort of laid back gait that you thought, is he a worker in the way we want? He seems to have a good skill set. But seeing him in pre-season and then seeing him in the handful of games we've seen now, he's one of those I think is continuing to surprise people, and I could see him making. Well, I think he will definitely play at a high level. Will he play for Liverpool? Well, that depends a lot on opportunity. But I don't know. But you get the suspicion that he's one of Klopp's favourites.
On opportunity, I'll stay with you on this, Rob. On opportunity, I think we're going to learn a lot in terms of opportunity, in terms of what happens in the Wolves game. There's going to come some sort of point where the Liverpool manager is surely going to be sick of replays. Because he hasn't half managed to have a few of them since he's been in charge at Liverpool. Replays in extra time, he seems to be very, 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 very good at.
Yeah.
There is some sort of... So I wonder if against in the Wolves game, you don't see what we can, inverted commas, call the cup team. If instead you see something a bit different. That said, the Wolves game is immediately before the Chelsea game. So you're still expecting to see sort of 6, 7, 8 changes, because he'll want his Liverpool players to be as ready as possible for the Chelsea game as core players. And I think, but what we're going to see from there is exactly who I'm saying this, I might be wrong, you might disagree, you might say no, he'll do the same again as he did against Plymouth. What do you think he's going to do when you're talking about opportunity? Mike's eager, go on, Mike.
I think Wolves are a higher standard.
Yeah, they are.
Full stop. So, you know, they're still not our standard, but they are a higher standard. And if I go back a little step, I think because of the state of the under-23 game in our country, is they don't play enough. They don't play enough, and they don't play. And I've heard, God, you know, I mentioned this to Rob before. Far be it from me to say give Neil Warnock any credit for anything, but he made a valid point about the lack of competitiveness in that league in terms of its physicality, and the difference between playing that game to then turning up and at the show and doing the big game, and I think managers can kind of get trapped in a bubble of looking at their own team in the under-23s and saying they're really good, but then when they have to do it then on a different platform where it is more, it's not necessarily more aggressive, more violent, more physical, bigger players, they struggle. And so I don't think he can get away with playing anything like the team that he played against Plymouth, against Wolves. I think they'd get a hiding.
The cultural problem, I'm going to say that youth football, if we're going down rabbit holes and expanding for a minute, and the problem with the under-23 system is, ask any under-23 coach or manager, and in the Anfield Wrap we've interviewed Michael Beale a couple of times this season, and they'll say, is it important to win the league, to win? And they all go, oh, no, it's not important to win the league. It's about development. And then they go, and in any case, you know, the players are taken off as they drop down levels, they move up levels, they're picked for the first team. So it's not about, we don't have the consistency of selection to win matches, and for it to be about winning is the ultimate. And you nod along at that and you go, yeah, I get you on that. And then you think about it and then you go, well, hang on, but when they play a team like Plymouth, who are even three leagues below the level they're meant to be at, those lads are about winning. They're about winning football matches come hell or high water. That is the problem, the quintessential problem with their development. So who are we talking about? Ajari. I think, and what he'll do against Wolves. I think...
Should we talk about Wolves after the break? Got to go for a break.
Sure, go for the break.
Rap Radio City Talk. Going to go for a break. Wasn't that good? That's Heroes by David Bowie. Back to Mike and Robin. The conversation you were having just before we hit the break there, Robbie, you shifted on to Ajari and the Ajari conversation. But in the context of all of this sort of thing, which, you know, throws open that Wolves game sits before Chelsea, and I'm having this conversation after the Plymouth replay, where you would think there's a chance you could put these lads on the pitch if you did the same thing against Wolves, and as Mike says, they could be blown out the water, and that could, you know, that could knock confidence. That could knock confidence the football club, knock confidence in general on the development process, knock confidence of the players as individuals, knock the confidence of the coaches. But simultaneously, Liverpool kick off at 12:30 against Wolves, and then they kick off at 7:45 or 8 p.m. on the Tuesday night against Chelsea. And this is where we come back to saying, well, we've chosen this squad. The manager's had, you know what I mean, he's had this view. He wants to have the ability for young players to be able to come through and rise and all this sort of stuff, and that's fine because there's different ways to run football clubs. But this is now becomes a bit of a pressure moment. It's going to become a bit of a pressure moment for these players, for himself in that selection, the Chelsea game, all in.
The manager was at pains to say, I don't know which press conference it was, I think the one before last, that because they were pushing him on, oh, your youth project, you're picking them to give them this experience, etc, etc. No, he went, no, I'm not. I'm picking the best team I can pick, given the context of the fixtures. Mm. Now, and I think that's exactly the way he will approach us. He's got Southampton, which is a League Cup semi-final, one step from Wembley, so you know what's at stake there. And then Chelsea 6 days after that. The Wolves game is one where he has to rotate. He simply has to. It's not about how he views kids' development or he views the next round of the Cup. His priorities are in order, Chelsea and the Southampton game. The Cup comes to the bottom of that. So I think it's going to be an interesting challenge. In a way, I think it might help us. Plymouth, we were on a hiding to nothing with the young players because they're fourth division. We're at home. Even the young players are expected to thrash Plymouth. Wolves, a championship side coming to Anfield. I think if we're picking a second 11, full second 11, which is what I expect that day, I think the bookies are going to make the odds pretty tight. And I think Klopp's going to go, you're not exactly underdogs in your own pitch here, boys, but you're going to have to fight. And I think being asked to fight will help those lads. I think it'll help focus them. It won't be like you have to dominate, swag, have a performance. They have to win for Liverpool. That's all you have to do.
I think he'll be more strategic with the players that he brings in from the youth or the fringe. I don't think he can afford to go across the middle of his midfield in the same way that he did with Plymouth with youth players.
I just think
there's too much. I think there's too much physicality. I think where he can take his risks are out wide because by the nature of those positions, mistakes they make are less likely to hurt you than lose them getting the turnover of the ball in the middle of the park, which is likely to happen with those young players against a physical, stronger Championship side. So I think he'll stay quite strong through the middle, and he'll use his squad or his youth round up the sides of the pitch.
But okay, as a principle, if you'd ask him that question a month or so ago, I think he'd say yes. I want to do what Mike's doing. But I think in the heat of what he's got to do, I think his options are limited. The one player I think he probably can bring in to strengthen the middle because of the way the fixtures fall and who he would prefer is Emre Can. So I put money on it. If assuming Emre Can doesn't get the nod in midweek against Southampton and isn't...
Or maybe even if he does but doesn't get the nod against Swansea.
Yeah, but and isn't slated for being the first 11 against Chelsea, it's Can, Ajaria and Stewart. He's not going to throw in a Henderson or a Wijnaldum as well. He's not going to play two of those three. So I think he'll try and go as strong as he can, but while still being able to make 10 changes for Chelsea.
Mm. On that, you mentioned Stewart there. Yeah. 10 will be. But on this, there's the going into the market thing as well, which has been, you know, he's been mooted and linked with another. I'll go back to you again, there's Rob, with a right winger today. 19-year-old from Belgium, from Genk, has been mooted today, I noticed. And the winger links don't stop.
They're relentless.
But no Ojo. I can't work out if they're relentless because there's a press thing where Liverpool have got a weakness. They look like they could do with another winger. We'll keep talking about that. Or if there's an element of Liverpool are very much looking for a winger and all that sort of stuff. But no Ojo against Plymouth, therefore, felt a bit like a thing. You would have thought Ojo would get time on the pitch against Plymouth, and yet he only got on from the bench. I expected him to start. And you wonder whether or not if we are talking about lads who may well just be getting parked for the rest of the season, if Ojo might be one who ends up with sort of, because of the injuries he's had, it disappears for him.
I think Ojo's a bit unlucky because I think Klopp makes the decision that Origi and Sturridge needs to be played into form, and they could have done with goals, and it didn't really work out. But so I think that he's unlucky in that sense. And Ben Woodburn is the head of the queue because there's a feeling at the academy that he is something special, and that there may be this sort of quickening that goes on this season, and he may force himself into real first 11 reckoning. Again, it didn't look like it so much on Wednesday night. So I think Ojo's unlucky, and the manager brings Ojo on for Sturridge, I think, and he gets a good 25-26 minutes.
Outstanding.
Yeah, and he was outstanding, and Klopp was at pains to say he wasn't. Watch the Klopp's reaction when they come off the pitch. He goes almost straight to Ojo. I wouldn't, there's a part of me that thinks he could gamble on Ojo even tomorrow if he, it's because, well, okay, we're going to come on to talk about Swansea, but if there's a wild selection and he thinks I didn't like either of Origi and Sturridge there, and they don't look particularly sharp. I think he goes, you know what, sod it, Ojo.
It's out wide, or it's definitely out wide that he's going to do that. And I think Ojo is a candidate. I think he came on and he showed exactly what we were missing in the entire game. Mm. I mean, you can counter that and say, well, they were getting tired towards the end of the game. But he ran at them. He was direct. We were so not direct in that game. It was irritating to watch. And he came on and he just stretched them. He ran at them and he played like a winger. And in the absence of Mane,
Would you be tempted tomorrow? So you're picking your first choice 10, and then you say, you know what, I'm going to go with Ojo.
Do you know what? There's not that much. Right now, there's not that much difference between Wolves and Swansea in terms of where they are. There's not that much difference. In fact, you could argue Wolves might be a better outfit than Swansea right now. So, you know, so why not? If you wanted to do it, you know, I don't think it's that crazy to do it with a wide player. I don't think it's that crazy. It's different if it's in the middle. But out there, he showed enough in 20 minutes through the night to say that he's got over his injury problems. He's fast, he's direct, and in the absence of Mane, yeah, why not?
I think it's one of those gambles you can see a manager making and then correcting by half time because it just could not be his day. Let's not forget Ojo comes in and starts in Premier League games against opposition.
This is what I'm driving at. Last season this happens. He got 5 or 6 starts last season.
Yeah, we forget he's for a very, very young lad. He's actually got a bit of experience behind him, and it's only because of this really quite lengthy injury he's had where he feels like he's starting again in a way. But he has it in him, and I don't know. If you ask me to put money on it tomorrow, I think Sturridge is going to get in the nod. I think that's why he's the first to get substituted. I don't think it's a commentary on his performance. I think it was for that reason. But I don't think Sturridge is going to last the 90, and I think Ojo will feature at some stage.
Other one I wanted to mention was Stewart. Quickly, before we get into the break, Mike Stewart's into the news. In fact, Stewart's not covered himself in glory there against Plymouth across the two games. I don't think. I think he's gone from a player who looks as though he could be a useful squad player to Liverpool to maybe things have looked a little bridge too far. That's been said about him before. He's obviously got great character. He's obviously a very, very focused, determined young man. Yeah. He's an impressive young man from the way in which the manager speaks about him. Mm. But there's bits and pieces of his play where you're just thinking he just needs to show a little bit more quality.
But you're clicking your fingers there, and I think that's because he's ponderous.
He's chewing the ball all the time.
He's ponderous. He's slow on the ball. Takes too long to do stuff. He's not playing with his head up. He's playing sideways and backwards. He wasn't a great example for the young players around him, quite frankly. And I do wonder whether Stewart. I mean, he's at that age as well that I talked about earlier. He's on the wrong side of that age now. He's not a young player anymore. He's 24. Is that with someone like Stewart? Is he has a good game in him, but are they often enough? Is it just, you know, it's just physically not, he's just not in his body to be able to do that and have that? Because he's played well. He's played well for us against Spurs. I think you remember him playing pretty well. He lacks consistency, and when he's not on form, it drops, it's just too much. It's just too great for this level.
He is very well thought of at the club. Again, those Michael Beale interviews, they said he's a bit of a beacon of attitude and professionalism and how you go about it. I can't disagree with the comments. I mean, he's got limitations as a player. He was originally a centre back, so and you can sometimes see that in his play. There were times, pre-season against Barcelona. He has a great second half. His pressing is fantastic. I can see this two ways with Stewart. I can see that you go, yeah, maybe he's not here next season. He's had a nice run. It's been good to see a player of that age push on, and maybe he gets a move to one of the new promoted clubs next season. Or you could say, you know what, Lucas Leiva wasn't much better at this age. And then people rushed out, oh, of course he was. No, he wasn't. This was around the sort of age where Lucas was getting booed coming off pitches at Anfield. He was and this is the age where Lucas was, it was said, he can't ever get the ball forward. He just passed it sideways 5 yards. And there had to be build up this cult momentum to defend him. You know what, I wonder if, and I'm going to say this, and it's a bit of a cliche defence, I wonder if Stewart was a Brazilian lad or a Latin lad, whether we wouldn't have, I don't know, because we sort of imbue more mystery and more potential, I think, in players from abroad than we can good honest Joes from this country. And I'm not getting a bit Brexit this.
It's got very Brexit into it.
This is
the Anfield Wrap.
I've got to be able to defend a young
let's get into. You've got to be able to defend.
I'll find whatever I can.
Let's get into the news. This is the Anfield Wrap. Back in a minute or two. And over to Guido Clewellyn, who's hopefully going to say, hopefully, because I think Swansea had a good club, hopefully in one sense going to say that Paul Clemens looks like he might get them sorted out. In another sense, I hope it's a complete bag of rags, Guido, and you turn up to Anfield half-cooked. I mean, it's probably going to be halfway between those two points, isn't it? But Clemens in now, his feet are under the table. It's time to start getting results, but last week doesn't bode well, however good Arsenal are.
No, I think last week more than anything. So the task that he's got ahead of him, really, it really summed up the lack of quality in the squad, because in the first half, we actually kept our shape better than we have from probably in any game this season, and passed the ball around pretty well too, created the odd chance, but you know, that did also coincide with Arsenal being absolutely awful in that first half. They were shapeless, and then second half, when they actually did turn up and play somewhere near their best, you know, they tore us to pieces. They really did. And although there was an element of luck to three of their four goals, certainly, and maybe the 4-0 was a little bit harsh on Swansea, it still showed really the challenges that Paul Clement specifically faces this season.
Two new players have come in this week, Tom Carroll from Spurs and Martin Olsen, both around £4 million spent on them. Olsen looked decent to me, playing for Norwich when I saw him at times last season. It's, in many senses, it's new blood in and of itself feels like it's a bonus at this point, in that these lads now have had a 2016, sorry, and moving into 2017, where they've all looked at each other and they've lost too many games, and I think that can happen to some football teams sometimes. Being able to look around and not think, is this lad to me right? He's let me down before. And instead think, let's see what this boy can do. It can help a football team. I mean, it just, however good those players are, they can give everyone a bit of a lift. I know Jack Cork spoken about that as well.
Yeah, that's very important. We need to freshen up the squad because obviously confidence is extremely low at the moment around the club. So hopefully bringing in players, you know, can give everybody a little bit of a boost, can give us something different. But Olsen is certainly somebody who improves the squad, on paper at least. I mean, he's better than Neil Taylor and Stephen Kingsley, who are our current left backs. He'll certainly offer us a little bit more going forward than both of those players. In terms of Tom Carroll's he's not a bad signing. I think he'll be good in the long run. He's been here on loan before and did reasonably well. I don't think he's going to massively transform our midfield. He's very similar to what we've got in many ways. But, you know, he's still young. He's quite promising. And he's the kind of player, if we do fall into the Championship, he's the kind of player that you'd expect to do pretty well at that level.
That's often the quandary around the way in which players get signed in this window. It's interesting that you're speaking of Olsen there, and I'm getting the impression he's going to play left back on Saturday morning. Carroll, I'm getting the impression he's probably going to start from the bench. But when you're where you are at the minute, which is the bottom of the table, firstly, players, you know, it's a tough sell, isn't it, to say come and play for a side of a bottom. On the first side, but then the second part of that as well is that in the back of Swansea minds is the idea of, well, who can do as a job next season as well, and not knowing where that next season is. I mean, if you were sitting 12th, you can buy lads in January for next season, thinking, well, we're almost certainly going to be playing Premier League football, and it does sort of shift the priorities a bit. But what you can't start doing is actively planning for the worst, because then you'll bring it about. It's such a difficult balance, but the football club can't be irresponsible at the same time.
Yeah, it is a tough one. I mean, like you said, a club in our position could very easily panic and just flash the cash like other teams have done in the past. QPR is the one that springs to mind, really, you know. But I think it is more responsible to just think a bit longer term and look at who is available for a reasonable price within our price range, who improves the squad now, but can also, you know, either go down and do a good job in the Championship, or who knows, you know, prove so good in the second half of the season that even if we do go down, we can get some money back, you know, get some good money back for them. But it is tough to attract players in our position. We've seen with Carl Jenkinson from Arsenal now pulling out of a move to Crystal Palace, it seems today. So that, you know, again, it's difficult to attract players when you are struggling and there is no certainty about where you're going to be playing next season. So we do face big struggles in that respect, because let's face it, I'm a Swansea supporter, and I wouldn't be advising any players to join the Swans at this moment in time. So the people actually trying to seal these deals have got a difficult job on their hands.
the next part of that then becomes sort of the players who are there now, who have been letting the side down to some degree. I mean, I'm not saying for a second that people aren't trying, but it becomes, you know, looking at the lads who've been representing Swansea in a week in, week out sort of sense, and wondering if there's going to be any bold changes around, you know, around that. I mean, is Clement, I know that Bradley was almost, you know, seemingly picking the side by lot for a period of time there, but has Clement made any noises about significant changes in terms of who he's going to expect to do what, or is he still working his squad out?
Yeah, I think he's still working things out. I mean, he's had really two games in charge, one of which was an FA Cup match he made significant changes for, so I mean, the Arsenal game, there weren't, you know, huge changes to the side, really. You know, it was the biggest one was probably the fact that Leon Britton wasn't in the matchday squad. But that has happened before. He is 34 now and can't play 90 minutes every single week, despite the fact that he's still probably the best footballer we've got in our midfield. It's just the time has caught up with him now. So it's not entirely shocking that he's being left out of the matchday squad. And it also has to be pointed out that Clement was limited in terms of his options against Arsenal because of injuries in a few positions. I don't think he would have wanted to play Nathan Dyer and Wayne Routledge on the wings, but our other three wingers were all out injured, so he was stuck with that, really. So it's a bit early to find out yet what kind of personnel changes Clement's going to be working on. But judging by the first half against Arsenal, he is already trying to make us just a little bit more conservative and a little bit more compact when with and without the ball, which isn't a bad thing considering the way we've been conceding goals this season.
So, therefore, with an eye on the game at Anfield then, I mean, expecting that Olsen comes in and plays left back, are you expecting it to be a very, very similar side? I mean, I noticed in the Arsenal game, he brought Leroy Fair on pretty early. He got Baston on and gave him 20 minutes and had a little look at him, and that it must be the frustration, really, the money that's been spent on him in the summer there, how to get him out of it. Again, a lot of it comes down to Sigurdsson and how he's going to try and get the best out of him, but are you almost pretty much expecting him to go 4-2-3-1, be compact, get the bits and not rock the boat in any meaningful way?
Yeah, I think he'll go for a similar approach to the one against Arsenal, which was, like you said, 4-2-3-1, and try to just keep things tight for as long as possible. Whether we've got the players to do that successfully, well, I think, if I'm honest, we've proved already this season that we just can't, no matter how hard we try, we just can't keep decent sides out for long enough. So he'll go for it again, I'm sure, because it's a more sensible move than trying to go gung-ho when you go to somewhere like Anfield. But yeah, that's what I'd expect him to go for, and then try and... the one thing I will say against Arsenal, in that first half, we did look a little bit more creative when we did have the ball. It wasn't as though we were just playing for free kicks and corners the way we were under Bob Bradley. There did seem to be a little bit more focus on generating a decent build-up and trying to catch out Arsenal on the break. There was better high pressing, but it was the quality really that let us down then from that point on.
Is there a concentration issue? Because this is the other thing that occurred to me as well, seeing Williams playing at Everton and looking at the Swansea back four in terms of a concentration / organisational issue. Because, you know, there doesn't look as though there's a quintessential bottom 10 of the Premier League dominant centre-half there, the fella who, you know, is running that defence, first and foremost. And then looking at the way goals have been conceded, and just to put it in context for Liverpool supporters listening who may not be aware that, you know, Swansea conceded 4 at home to Arsenal, 3 at home to Bournemouth, 4 at home to West Ham, 3 away at Borough, 3 away at West Brom, 5 away at Spurs, 4 at home to Palace in a game that you went on and won, and 3 at home to Manchester United. And this is all since the start of November. And that's a lot of goals to ship. We're 21 games in and it's 40, I think it's 49 goals, and you know, is that the problem? Is there just no one there saying, lads, this is how we get through the next 5 minutes, lads, this is what I need from you now, lads, come in here, let's just do this, this is how you're organised from set pieces? Is just this, has that just completely disappeared?
The statistics are crazy, aren't they? They are absolutely insane when you really look at how many games this season we've played where we've conceded 3 or more goals. I think under Bob Bradley it was 8 out of his 11 games in charge. who conceded three or more goals, and a couple of those are fours and fives. You know, so it that tells you everything you need to know. We've got no chance of winning as long as we can't keep clean sheets. And yeah, the personnel just isn't there. I mean, Ashley Williams was aging, starting to show the signs of age. But one thing which never changed was his just ability to lead a team and organise a team. And we missed that more than absolutely anything else this season. It's just that organiser, that leader in any area of the pitch, but in particular at the back. The defenders who've tried to take his place, they're just not good enough in any way. And you spoke there about concentration, and that's one of the big problems we've got, I think, is that this team at the moment really struggles to keep focus for any length of time. And what tends to happen is that as soon as the opposition exerts any kind of pressure on that Swansea back four, they tend to crumble and they lose focus. They start making mistakes. They start getting dragged out of position. They freeze. They do absolutely everything wrong from that point on. And it's not just sort of from the point where they concede a goal. It's from the first attack they face. They look absolutely fine until the opposition just put together a few passes and get a shot away. That's at that point you can guarantee that things begin to unravel, and they get frazzled and just lose their minds entirely. So if you know, ideally in this window, if we're looking for anything, we should be looking for that authoritative centre back who can organise a side and you know, just lead by example. But unfortunately, that kind of player is very difficult to find, and that's particularly the case in January when, you know, if you have that kind of player, you're not looking to sell him at any price.
Yeah, you, the last thing you want, if you've got a strong defensive organiser, the last thing you actually do in January is let him go. it is that sort of thing. Do you want to give me a prediction for the game?
I'll go for 3-0 Liverpool. I know Liverpool have started, maybe have not been playing with the same energy of late as they were earlier on the season, but they should still, you know, absolutely tear Swansea to pieces. Unfortunately, I can't see anything other than a very comfortable Liverpool win this weekend.
Okay, thank you very much, Gito. Let's go back and find out what everyone else thinks. Everywhere by Fleetwood Mac. Speaking of which, Rob Cutman, there is.
Is that
just a joke? Just a joke. It's not even a good joke. It's just one away. there is a lot to be said for Gito, for a man coming on this show and saying that he's going to get beat 3-0. You could probably do without, you know, the idea that they put a strong defence in, new manager. He's had more time to work with them. He's had them all week. Everyone thought they might be stronger against Arsenal, but you're looking at the record of them this season, the number of times they've shipped threes, fours, and fives. Home and away, you've got to be thinking that Liverpool can find ways to put them to the sword.
Klopp said in the press conference, and I know managers do this and throw sugar at the opposition to soften them, but he was quite emphatic that they've had a radical turnaround in their level of performance, he stressed. Mm. He said, when we scout, we don't just look at results, we look at performance. Now, notwithstanding taking off a certain percentage for just manager, as I said, hyperbole and throwing sugar at it, he did think they're slightly better than their results suggest. Mm. Having said that, I don't care if they're 200% better than their results suggest. We have to be able to put them to the sword.
We have to beat them.
Not even if we're just in title contention, any kind of top of the table contention, we have to win a game like that. By the way, can I just put out some team news that was in the press conference about
by all means.
Henderson and Klein were, the way the manager was speaking, were 50-50, the pair of them. Both are only coming back into training today, and both in contention, but far from eligible to start. So your Kev Stewart's dream scenario may happen, Neil.
Well,
I think he'd do Chan Van Alden.
He doesn't need him in this game,
He does Chan Van Alden and Lallana, I suspect, is what he'd do. I think it's a really good opportunity for Alexander-Arnold, that said, if to get Swansea at home, to get his third game in the week, third game on the bounce. I think it'd be significant for him, and he can possibly therefore also have one eye on Southampton as well, you'd think. So the idea of getting four consecutive games, and then you'd expect him to play against Wolves now, as an idea that as a young footballer, Mike, you get those games on the bounce. I wouldn't have any issues tomorrow if Alexander-Arnold starts. No. I wouldn't be concerned about it. I'd actually be thinking, let's see what his delivery's like around the better players, around the good players, if he links up with them.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think if he's going to take a risk on one of those, then yeah, he, Klein doesn't play, and he has another few days to get ready for the next game. I think even though Swans are in the state they're in, we are markedly different with Henderson. You know, it might be a case there that we take players off after 60 if we're doing very well, you know, and give them a shorter run out. The teams that have come to Anfield of late who've defended, our problem is scoring, ironically, compared to where we were at the start of the season. We're not scoring as freely as we were before. You know, we saw it against, what was it, when we came to Anfield, it was Sunderland. It took us a long time to get our goals. We're not free flowing at the moment at all. So, you know, that's the only caveat I put to this. No, yes, no doubt we should be taking Swansea to the cleaners. But we aren't scoring as well as we were. I would like to see Firmino back in the middle now. Coutinho's back. Coutinho on the wide, Firmino in the middle. Makes a big difference to us.
Who do you want in the other one? If it was just you, not watching the manager does, what would you do, Mike Girling, was you?
What would I like to do? I'd play Lallana there and I'd put Lucas in the middle.
Is that what you'd do against Swansea?
Yeah. Just to free it up a little bit. I mean, you could say yes, well, we don't need Lucas against Swansea, but you don't. But maybe you don't play Chan in this game. You play Lucas and Wijnaldum, AN other
Henderson.
You throw Henderson in there. Yeah, but then you go Lallana. I want us to get back to that. When we were scoring for fun, it was the front three with Firmino in the middle, and I think his movement is the reason why we've stopped, like in the front is the middle is why we've stopped scoring.
I think if you had two Lallanas, I would play one of them up. And we've got Mane out. I'd play one of the Lallanas in the front three and have another one in midfield. What I think, that the secret for us scoring goals, and this goes back to 13-14 under Brendan Rodgers even, we became a free-scoring machine when effectively Brendan was playing 4-2-4. However one you want to dress it up, there were two centre mids and four attacking players. I'm counting Coutinho along with Sterling, Suarez and Sturridge back then. I think the reason we scored lots of goals, Mane, Firmino, who's the other guy?
Coutinho and Lallana.
That quartet is why we score lots of goals. The reason I fear, if you go down the approach Mike's saying, is I get it, you have a certain, and maybe away from home I think they get more tempted with, you have that solidity, but you don't have as many players who naturally can get in the box, and when they do get in there, have a change of feet and can finish. So for me, you probably have to keep Lallana in the three in midfield, and then it really is a straight choice between Origi, Sturridge and Ojo. I think those are the three, and I think Sturridge probably gets nod. What would I do? I don't know. I'd have a sleepless night on this one.
Exactly. And I agree with you, and you're absolutely right. But Origi's form stinks at the moment.
Yeah, he's last choice.
Whereas a couple of months ago, you'd have him first. You'd have him right back in there. You know, very good. Runs the channel as well. Strong. He just seems to have forgotten he's lost his mojo completely. Sturridge, for different reasons, looks like he's lost his mojo. So, normally you go back. Of course, that's what I'd do. But there's no point playing players who aren't playing well, you know.
No.
It's to play players into form in a Premier League game is not the right thing to do.
It doesn't feel like it'd take much to get Sturridge into form. I'd err on the side of Sturridge with everybody else around him. So everyone else is playing. So Lallana's playing, Henderson's playing. I think one of the keys to Sturridge is have Henderson on the pitch.
Yes, because it
was
early ball.
Gerrard was saying was talking at the Plymouth game doing the summarise, and he was saying Sturridge's movement's been great. And he was saying it, as someone said to me on one of our shows, in the manner of Steven Gerrard looking at that going, if I'm playing centre mid, I'm just hitting him all day. I think if you can get Henderson on the pitch.
I think he's also sending a message to Daniel Sturridge as well. I think he's being quite deliberate about what he's saying there. That, you know, I know, we know, you know, keep your head up type of thing.
We did an Anfield Wrap Unwrapped show yesterday, and I'd watched it back, and actually, Sturridge actually about four or five times, I think mainly in the first half, ends up with his head on his hands because he's made that run to the edge of the 6-yard box, and just at the last moment it's deflected out of his path. I mean, the most telling one was when Coutinho hits Alexander-Arnold on the back post, brilliant half volley back across the ball, just nicks a defender and it falls behind Sturridge. So Sturridge's performance wasn't actually as bad as I think the consensus was after the game. I think what might affect Klopp's overall shape and the content of his team is having one eye on Southampton. Now, I know normally you go, well, this is the game in front of us, it's the Premier League, but he's got a chance to go, you know what, does Daniel need back-to-back games? I could just start him against Southampton. Let's throw Ojo in. Same with Jordan Henderson and Klein. He goes, I'd like to. Should I gamble on starting?
I would ensure Henderson's on that pitch.
Tomorrow?
Yes.
I'm sure he's on the bench.
As opposed to Southampton?
Yes. because the league's more important. And I think
semi-final.
But if there's a doubt on his injury and you can put him on the bench, look, I'm not disagreeing with you, but I'm saying that's a decision the manager has to make. Mm. I'm not sure which.
It's quite a big gap between. Because it's an early kickoff.
Yeah,
Saturday,
it is a reasonable
and Wednesday
gap.
Evening. It's decent, you know.
It is a reasonable gap, and I'd be more than happy to rest people for Wolves. But I just think that for a variety of reasons at the moment, I think we just look a better outfit with Henderson on the pitch. And I don't think it's just the nature of the football that he's playing. I think that, and this is, you know, for ages we've been talking about leaders and Henderson stepping up and all this sort of stuff. Well, that's a bit of a double edged sword sometimes, because I just think this Liverpool side now is in a position where it just looks better if Jordan Henderson plays. And that is,
he moves the ball quicker now. He moves the ball quicker. He's the only one of that midfield three who he plays a first time pass. He's the only one who does that, and that is key to us in the way we play. And when he's not there, we struggle massively.
I agree, but he's only just come into training today, so it's a risk to play him.
But it also shows that it was a risk to play him against United, and it was one we took. Probably, and now I understand, yeah. United away, but it sounds as though if he's only just got back in today, it sounds as though there were circumstances where he was forced through to play against United, which also puts his performance in even greater context in terms of how well he's done. Give me a prediction, Liverpool versus Swansea, Mr. Rob Cupman.
Do you know what? I think it's 2-1 to us. I think it's a miserable afternoon that we just end up happy with at the end, just.
Mike,
can I just say Liverpool win?
If you want to just say Liverpool win.
I just want to say Liverpool win.
That's all that you want to say.
That's all I want to say.
That's all that Mike Gilling wants to say is, yeah. Liverpool win. Doesn't want to find himself carried away. It's an intriguing situation the manager's in. These gentlemen here think that Ojo's got a good chance of starting against Swansea. I'm intrigued by that. I wouldn't mind seeing how that goes. But then Liverpool have got Southampton not long after. We'll know more, obviously, when the team sheet goes in. It's 11:30 tomorrow morning. Remember, it is a 12:30 kickoff when Liverpool play against Swansea at Anfield. Hopefully, it's a game where Liverpool are able to put a statement of intent out. But all that will matter in the long scheme of things will be the 3 points. That's the Anfield wrap.
Sports Social Podcast Network.